Secrets can lead to misunderstanding. Misunderstanding can cause fear. Everyone knows what fear can do. We are here to learn and shine the bright light of truth on these stories. You will know why Show Me Scares.
Hey guys.
Hello, hello.
I'm Shayla.
And I'm Terry.
And we're still Show Me Scares.
Yes. You not gonna change yet?
I don't know. Jerry Polly at Hillbilly Horror Stories calls us Show Me Spirits all the time. So,
oh my gosh. I'm like, how are we ever going to get reviews?
I know. It's really funny. Every time he's doing a live or something and I'm on there and I'll comment because I've told him I'm first and foremost a fan of yours. So don't ever feel like you have to plug my show when I'm talking to you or on Facebook or anything. And every single time he'll say, that's Shayla from Show Me Spirits. And I'm like,
face plant.
Yeah. No. Thank you, but
please get my name right.
I know, it's funny.
He's funny.
He's amazing. Anyway, as always, thank you so much for listening and continuing to support us. It means the world to us. We have a lot of goals for this, and y'all are helping that happen. So,
keeping us on track, for yes. Sure. I love mm-hmm. it.
And I wanted to mention something because over the last couple episodes, we had been talking about our international listeners and how crazy it was and naming all the countries. And I just wanted to say, U.S. listeners, we love you too.
Yeah, just throw them guys on the back burner.
That's what I mean. It wasn't meant that way, but I thought it may have come off that way. No, it's just cool to us because we live such sheltered lives and have never been anywhere in the world that it's so cool that we have people from
other countries.
Yeah, that are tuning in and listening, and that's just kind of really cool to us. So that's the only reason that we
we love all of our U.S. listeners as
absolutely
well.
U.S. is definitely our biggest listener base, but
of course,
yeah, it was just something really cool that we wanted to mention, and but I didn't want anybody to think that I was like, man, the U.S. listeners, whatever. But so
we can't be that way. We're
no
big USA.
Yeah.
So, we're on episode 15.
My favorite number!
Oh my.
Yes. So, because of that, I decided to look and see if I could find a case from the year I was born.
Wow, I like how you plug that in.
I know. Actually, this is a case that I really wanted to do, and I just luckily it was enough. It was the year of my birth.
And which is? How old are you?
It was 1987.
Wah, wah, wah.
I know. 1746. That's what it feels like at this point.
Oh, you're so old. Don't even want to talk about
this
it.
This is a super sad case. And we say this
like
every
always.
Time. I know. Every time we do a true crime, I'm always like, this story sucks.
All true crime sucks.
It does. But it's fascinating, too. And so that's what keeps everybody coming back to it. I actually feel like the paranormal are the ones we can have some fun with. And, you know, unless we find some where, you know, we have a criminal who's just stupid as shit and we get to make fun of them.
You're still having fun with it.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I feel like that's really the only true crime ones we can have fun with.
Valid.
Because the others just suck. They suck. They're sad. People die. And it sucks. So, anyway. The story tonight takes place in Elkland, Missouri. I had never heard of Elkland, Missouri. I mean, obviously, there's all these tiny, tiny little towns scattered throughout Missouri that nobody's ever
like
heard
Winona.
Of.
Like Winona?
Yeah. But I mean, even Winona's 10 times the size almost of Elkland.
Really? It must be small, small.
Five times.
Get your numbers right.
I know I did math right. Anyway, so Elkland is a small rural town in northwest Webster County. In 1987, the population was around 200 people.
Woo!
Yes, and this was composed mostly of dairy farmers.
Aww.
So I'm thinking it's probably like large farms, you know, spread out quite a bit.
A lot of cows.
A lot of cows, for sure. We will be talking about the Buckner and the Schnick family. Steve Buckner was the son of a successful dairy farmer. He married his high school sweetheart, Jan, and they bought their farm in 1979.
Aww.
The couple had four sons. They were known throughout the town as exceptionally good people. Steve's sister, Julie, lives just up the road with her husband, Jim Schnick, and their two children. And they have their own dairy farm.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. The Schnicks are also highly regarded in Elkland. Jim is known to be a very hard worker with the highest of moral standards. He and Jim both served on the volunteer fire department, and they were well known in the little community. Well, though cool. It seems that people favored Jim over Steve. They thought he was somewhat of a better guy as far as morals and values, and he worked his ass off, apparently. Everything that I saw where people had been talking about him was this guy worked and worked. Mm-hmm. He worked so hard. Even people who talked about him from when he was a teenager and worked for them, old farmers, would say, man, he was a hard worker even when he was a kid.
Oh, so a good guy.
Yeah. In the mid-1980s, the U.S. economy was in trouble, and farmers were feeling the effects. Many of them were losing their farms. This is the time when Willie Nelson started Farm Aid, and he was also seen pleading with Congress to get help for farmers. By 1987, Steve is 2 years behind on his mortgage, ouch, and he's likely going to lose his farm. The eldest of his sons, 14-year-old Kirk, is doing all he can to help his family and keep his farm going.
Another little hard worker.
Yes. Kirk slept in the camper shell on the back of a truck outside, and he worked like a man trying to keep things going amid this economic turmoil.
I'm sure he got up bright and early and was doing all he could.
He did.
Poor kid.
Jim Schnick was doing much better. Maybe because he was such a hard worker. That's what a lot of people said. He was a much harder worker than Steve, so he kept his farm going better.
Well, that's what it takes.
He helped his brother-in-law by lending him farm equipment and money through the difficult times. But then Steve began taking equipment without asking and not returning it. And Jim felt he was being taken advantage of. Steve seemed to lean on others to do all the work for him. Tensions rose between the brothers. And eventually, Jim just decided that he had to cut ties with Steve.
I don't blame him. No. There's only so much you can do.
He said that he was not going to allow him to take advantage and then cause problems when he stood up for himself. So basically, he would say, yo, you can't just borrow my stuff and not bring it back. And then Steve would blow up and play victim and make him look like the bad guy. Mm-hmm. So he just had to kind of cut ties with him. And there's a little more going on than that, and we'll see that later. September 24th, 1987. 14-year-old Kirk gets up before dawn to work on the farm. After working for a couple hours, he goes to school. Then he comes home and he works until dark.
Oh, whoa.
This had become Kirk's new normal. He worked from the time he got up until he went to bed each day, just squeezing school in between.
Wow.
He was absolutely not a normal child.
For sure.
The boy never stopped, and he seemed to harbor some resentment toward his father for this.
Because he's having to work so hard.
Mm-hmm. Many of his friends say Kirk would call his father lazy and talk about how he always wanted everyone else to do everything for him.
It's getting bad when your own son sees it.
On September 25th, 1987, the next day, at around 6 a.m., I don't know why I specified that, but whatever. Around 6 a.m., Jim Schnick calls 911 to report he has been shot.
Oh.
Police find him alive but confused. He has a gunshot in his leg and a stab wound in his stomach.
Ouch.
The two Schnick children are asleep in their beds.
With a gunshot and all that happening?
Yeah. Huh. Kirk's body is lying in the floor in the hallway, covered in knife and bullet wounds. He has a bullet wound in his neck, and most of the stab wounds are to his chest.
Wow, the boy?
Yes. In his uncle's house, mm-hmm, up the road. There is a revolver in his right hand. Later, it was determined that this revolver was registered to his mother, Jan.
Interesting.
Jim's wife, Julie, is found in her bed, dead from two gunshot wounds to the head.
Oh, geez.
Yes. Jim is barely conscious and unable to answer questions. He is airlifted to the hospital in Springfield. So now the sheriff has the grim task of informing the Buckners that their oldest son is dead.
And his sister, Steve's sister.
True. So they drive down the road to the Buckner's home. And when they arrive, the Buckner house is eerily quiet. This is farming community. Remember, 6 a.m. These people are out there already for a while. They receive no response to their knocking, and they enter the unlocked front door. They are met with a startling, gruesome scene covered in blood. There, still in their beds, are the bodies of the younger three Buckner boys. They have all been shot execution style. Two of them were still in their beds, and the two-year-old is in his playpen.
What? Oh, that still gives me goosebumps. Those babies.
The police search the house, but do not locate Steve and Jan. They spread out to search the property, and they locate Jan's body just outside the milk barn. She has been shot in the back of the head. After searching the property, Steve is still missing and a possible suspect at this point.
Mm-hmm.
With the manhunt underway, they investigate the crime scene at the Schnick home. Jim's overalls are sent to the crime lab along with the knife beside Jim and the revolver Kirk was clutching in his right hand. Police canvass the area for witnesses, and neighbors report hearing voices and gunshots around 4:55 a.m. Before too long, the coroner arrives, and so does the press.
Of course.
The news of the massacre rocks the small community and those surrounding it. This made national headlines.
Oh, I'm sure.
By that afternoon, they locate Steve's body in the cemetery about halfway between the Buckner and Schnick farms.
What the heck? How did he get there?
He is dead from two gunshots to the back of the head. If you're keeping count, that means the entire Buckner family is dead. All but Kirk have been shot in the head. The police have only one witness to the crime, Jim Schnick. His wounds were not life-threatening, and they needed to question him at the hospital. Jim says that he was in a state of shock at this point. He couldn't really believe his wife was dead. He kept thinking she would walk in to see him. Jim relays the following story to the police regarding the events of the morning. He got up early to check on a cow that was due to calf. When he came into the yard, he saw flashes coming from inside the house. He walked into the home and saw a shadowy form near the door. There was another flash and he was shot in the leg. He grabbed a knife that was laying nearby and charged the intruder. There was a fight and he stabbed the figure many times until the figure went limp and fell to the floor. He realized the shadow is his nephew Kirk and calls the police. The evidence to this time seems to point in the direction of Kirk being the killer.
What? No way.
They piece together the events likely to have happened.
This boy just get tired of working so hard and decide to take out the family?
That's the idea. He kills his mom and dad, then loads his dad's body into the truck. He then killed his little brothers while they slept. Kirk then drove to the Schnicks, dumping Steve's body along the way.
What?
He killed Julie and was interrupted before killing the children and attempted to kill Jim. In the days leading up to the murders, some people claim Kirk Buckner was acting strangely. Could it be that the boy caved from all the pressure of caring for his family? Kirk worked all day and did well in school and reported that his dad was lazy and did not help. He was even said to have told a classmate that he would like to kill his father.
I don't know about all this. That's an awful lot for a 14-year-old to accomplish.
I know, but think about a 14-year-old. Not thinking of consequences.
That's valid.
They're pissed off because they're pissed off at everything anyway. And then all this pressure.
That's true. He just maybe just snapped and decided I'm done with all this working and BS.
Maybe. The town gathered for the funeral of the Buckner family on September 28th, 1987. There were over 500 in attendance with 34 pallbearers.
Whoa.
The Reverend... Sorry, was you going to say something?
That's a lot for that small town.
It is. I mean, it would have to be outlying areas, too.
All the farmers, I'm sure.
The Reverend, directing the services, said this. If there's anything to be learned from all this, it's to learn to seek someone to talk to if we're in trouble and to have ears to hear when someone cries out. Everything man makes has a breaking point. In mankind, there's a point of breaking too. Something in Kirk had reached that point and he just snapped. Be sure of this. Kirk is loved by all his family and friends. If there's a weakness here, a failure here, it is on you and I as a society.
Whoa. That's, wow. That's, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all our fault, man. We should have done something.
We should have helped that boy.
Mm-hmm. Five hearse carried the family to the cemetery where the family caskets were lined up next to each other. Jim was unable to walk to the graveside, but watched from the truck. People that tried to speak with him to offer condolences said that he just sat there with his head down and never spoke to anyone. He remained long after the others had gone and says at this time he just felt numb and in denial. Neighbors offer their help in cleaning the family homes. They did not want other family to come in to the blood-soaked crime scene, so they scrubbed it clean.
Uh-oh.
The little town of Elkland was ready to move on and heal from this tragedy.
Yeah, but how fast?
Quickly. Then the sheriff receives a phone call from one of Kirk's teachers. Teachers and friends all had serious doubts about Kirk's guilt. He was a good kid and he never showed any signs of violence.
They knew him.
Yeah. Also, she had seen reports about the crime scene and something stuck out to her. The gun was said to have been found in Kirk's right hand. But he was left-handed.
Oh, that's major.
Yeah. That would not have made sense if he were actively shooting. Police decide to take a second look. There was one part that never seemed plausible for investigators. Kirk was about 90 pounds, a small boy. His father, Steve, was a big man and about 250 pounds.
Oh, no way he could carry him to the truck.
Exactly.
Moving.
How would he have loaded his father at dead weight into the truck to
even
dump him.
Even a small person dead weight's hard to pick up.
Yeah. I mean, he is a strong farm boy. But,
yeah, but 200...
I know, I'm just saying, you know. My thought about this, honestly, is that it didn't make sense anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you leave every other body and take one and dump it?
That's true.
It makes no sense at all. None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you say, I'm just going to take this biggest one
and
take it up the road? That doesn't make any sense. There would be no point.
Right.
Then there is the matter of the retaining pin in the gun. Or should I say not in the gun?
Oh, was it missing?
The gun held 6 shots and there were 17 shots fired that morning. Which meant the killer had to reload.
Yeah.
In order to reload, the retaining pin would be removed and then reinserted before the weapon would fire. The gun Kirk was holding was missing the retaining pin. It would not have fired without it.
So there's no way he could have shot 17 times.
Okay. Hey. I said it was missing, but maybe I lied a little bit. It was not actually missing because it had been found in a surprising spot.
Do tell.
The pocket of the pants removed from Jim Schnick.
There it is.
The pants hold more evidence against Jim. All the gunshot residue on the pants was on the inside of the pant leg.
Interesting.
Okay, do you understand that? Because I read that over and over again, it was like some big bombshell, but I didn't get that. It was on the inside of the pant leg. Does that mean it was so close to his leg that it spread
it
out
got
inside?
In his pants when he had his pants on. Is that what you mean?
No, I mean the gunshot where the gunshot went into his leg. All the residue was on the inside of his pant leg, not the outside.
Mm.
So
I don't understand it.
I don't either, unless that means like it was so close that it actually like spread out inside.
Instead of
if it was far away, it would only hit his outside.
Do you only get residue if you use the weapon to an extent? Like if you're holding the weapon? Because do you get residue from when somebody else shoots you?
Uh-huh.
You do? Okay. I don't know then. And maybe just because it's so close that it has so much residue on the inside.
That's what I'm thinking, that it's so close that when it spread, it went inside. Mm-hmm. And his claim was he was shot when he was standing at the door and the intruder was standing in the hallway.
I didn't know exactly what the residue part was. Like, I know I hear it, but I didn't know if residue only come from pulling a trigger and that.
No, it's a cloud.
Gotcha. Thanks for that. I didn't... Yeah, but... Would you get residue if somebody shot you from a distance? Do you get residue just from the bullet hitting you?
I'd say it depends on the distance.
That's what I was getting at. Like, maybe he only has residue from him pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
Instead of not having residue on the inside of your pants from a bullet coming and hitting you from so many distance.
Right. And that's what... That's the only thing that makes sense to me. And
made it... Yeah. Why they made it a big deal.
I'm sure people listening are like, you idiots. But I just didn't get it. I'm like, what? But why would there be residue on the inside?
This is why we are not investigators.
But that does kind of make sense. Like, as I was saying it, asking you, does that make sense to you? It kind of popped in. Like, it could be that it's inside because the gun was against his leg when he shot.
See, we know this. Come on now.
Yeah. And if it wasn't, it would have been on the outside of his pants. Maybe. If it was close, but not against his leg. So, I don't know. There's that.
Anyway, sorry. Back on track.
Yeah. Kirk's body also does not fit the story. The gunshot to his chest was a dud, and it only left an indention.
Damn.
Yeah, that hurt. The fatal shot entered his back and struck his heart.
Whoa, wait. He got shot in the back?
Yes. Well, he was shot in the neck. Well, the shot in his neck, sorry, was likely after he was on the ground.
Jeez.
And he was already dead before he was stabbed. So there was the fatal shot to his heart, but there was also a stab wound to his heart. And the big problem with that was Jim's story said that they struggled. He ended up able to shoot a couple times, get the gun turned to shoot him a couple times. And he stabbed him a few times. The problem is, if he was shot in the heart or that stab wound to the heart, either one of those would have killed him. He would not have kept fighting at that point. So that's not really plausible. Mm-hmm. Also, I did see, and I didn't really include it because I didn't find it until I was researching some, just some cleanup at the end. The prosecutor said Kirk was badly beaten. Brutally beaten.
Why did he take his anger out on Kirk? Poor kid. Yeah.
So, it just doesn't.
Unless he tried to fight back some, but this poor kid.
Mm-hmm. Investigators need to re-examine the evidence. But, remember that crime scene?
It's all clean now.
Those nice neighbors cleaned it all up for the family. These sweet people thought they were trying to help. And what they ended up doing was just contaminating the scene and destroying evidence. Yep. At this point, all the physical evidence is pointing toward the lone survivor, Jim Schnick. I guess he's not lone because his children survived. But none of the evidence is particularly earth-shattering. It says your story don't really add up, but it doesn't say you absolutely did it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So nothing is saying, ooh, Jim we got it. Him.
Mm-hmm.
Investigators needed more. Why would this well-liked man kill his in-laws, nephew, and wife? Nephews. Police learn of a rumor about Jim Schnick having an affair. To most, it's just that, a rumor. Jim is very respected in this town, and many people simply don't believe in the gossip going around about him. Sadly, it was more than just a strong, small-town rumor mill. It was true. 2 years prior to the murders, Jim got a serious chest injury and ended up in the office of nurse practitioner Nancy Bruner. Nancy Bruner was a divorced mother of two. What should have been a 15-minute meeting turned into 4 hours of pleasant conversation.
Good Lord.
Like, is that why I have to wait at the doctor's office so long? Because they're having their dates in there? The hell? I mean, what kind of doctor's office is that?
I don't know.
I'm hoping he was the last appointment of the day. And they were like, let's go grab coffee after this. The two struck up a friendly relationship that quickly became an affair. Julie had no idea.
Oh, poor Julie.
But she could tell there was a distance growing between her and Jim. The police bring Nancy in for an interview. She tells them that she and Jim became good friends. He would travel to Springfield to see her often. She does not have any information about the shootings, though. A few days after her interview, she calls back to say she wasn't completely truthful. She then tells police that she was involved in a serious relationship with Jim Schnick. He told her he was going to divorce his wife and they could get custody of the children, then get married and live happily ever after.
It always happens that way.
I know. Ladies, oh, come on now. Oof. Also, if they'll cheat with you, they will cheat on you, honey.
Fair enough.
And if they don't, you're always going to wonder. I mean, I would.
That's women and men. It's not just men.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying it's one or the other. For sure. Of course, that's not how it went, because that's not how it ever goes, right? When Jim is with Julie, he is working on their marriage. The couple began going to marriage counseling and trying to make it work. By summertime in 1987, Nancy has had enough. She decided she was going to go and have a talk with Julie and tell her to just let Jim go. Basically, she's ready to start her life with her lover, and his wife wouldn't let him go to be happy. The two women spoke at the Schnick house, and they both discovered they had been lied to.
Wow.
Jim had been making them promises instead of choosing a path and taking it. After this talk, Nancy was furious and Julie was ready for divorce.
Uh-oh.
This is all Nancy's story.
Mm-hmm.
After the police find out this, they're definitely thinking, here's our motive. And on October 1st, Jim Schnick is arrested. He gave a full confession, which was filmed.
What?
Mm-hmm. He still didn't tell the whole truth. You'll see what I mean about the story. Here is what he said happened. And I will say, I have added little snippets in to explain the story a little better, but you'll know what's coming from him. On the morning of the murders, Julie was angry about the affair and she called her brother.
Oh, no.
There was already animosity between Jim and Steve, and this was when it would reach its boiling point.
Yeah.
Steve grabbed his wife's gun and rushed down the road to his sister's house. Jim was already out working and met him in the driveway. The men got into an argument and Steve pulled out the pistol. He told Jim he would just get rid of him and clean this whole mess up. He would get him out of the picture and out of their family for good. The two men fought over the gun and in the struggle it went off. Steve went limp. The problem? What's the problem with that story, Terry?
You tell me, Shayla.
Steve was shot twice, square in the back of the head. That is not consistent with struggling with a gun.
And he was moved. Like, if you accidentally shoot somebody or something like that goes down, you're not going to move the body,
are you? He explains that.
Oh, my bad.
But, I mean, he was executed. It's not like he...
He probably was trying to run. You think?
Or do
you think
I don't know.
You think Jim got a hold of the gun and then, you know...
I don't know. Can't say. About Steve, that's one that I don't understand. How it came to, how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Jim realizes that Jan would know that Steve came to his home, so he loads Steve's body into his truck and drives it back to the Buckner house, dropping Steve's body off in the cemetery on the way. Again, I don't know the
thought. Just making it easier for the coroner.
Unless he really thought he was only going to do that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know.
It's weird. I don't know why he loaded the body up.
No. He finds Jan outside the milking barn with her back to him. He shoots her in the head without her even knowing he was there. Kirk, who sleeps outside in the camper, is awoken by the sound. He tries to make his escape and is shot in the back while he's running away.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Then he said he went into the home and, quote, this is what he said, I saw the video, destroyed the other three children.
What a psycho.
Yeah.
And this is the guy that everybody liked.
Right. 2-year-old Michael was shot once, and the gun was pressed to his head, evident from the powder burns around the wound. Timmy, the 7-year-old, was shot twice in the head, and Dennis, the 8-year-old, was shot in the head 3 times.
He just went on a rampage. Those babies had nothing to do with all this.
When he's leaving the house, he notices that Kirk is still alive and loads him up to drive back to his house.
Interesting.
None of this jives with me because he says he shot him in the back, and from the coroner's report, the shot in his back was a fatal shot. He would not have still been alive.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand that
part.
Yeah,
the whole Kirk thing's weird too.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, if you're going to admit to killing people, why not just tell the whole truth?
Yeah.
You're a bastard now because you killed kids, especially innocent people.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. I get mm-hmm. it. He claims that he carried Kirk over his shoulder into his bedroom where his wife lay sleeping to tell her what he had done.
Whatever.
He says that Kirk's body slipped and he tried to catch it and the gun went off and killed Julie.
That's the most stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Again, Julie was shot twice in the head, uh-huh. and forensics show the gun was fired within 3 feet of her forehead.
Wow.
He then stages the scene with Kirk's body and shoots himself in the leg before calling 911. There was a third story that I found just a little bit on. I didn't really understand. I think it may have been part of the tape that I just couldn't find. Because I think all of his confessions, and I say confessions because he told a few different stories, they were all on that tape. But the one that everybody knows of is the one that I've told. There was a third story, though, that Jim had told at one point. And this story involves Steve and Kirk abducting him, and he killed them in self-defense.
Yeah, okay.
And then whatever happened with everybody else,
and then he just killed everybody else because why not?
He was terrified, and everybody was plotting against him, maybe. I don't know. That's all I could find on that one, and I didn't really see where the explanation was for the rest of the family, but I just wanted to mention it anyway. I didn't even know if it's true that he told that because I didn't see that video, but
just throwing it out there.
Yeah, just because it was mentioned at some point. On April 11th, 1988, Jim Schnick's murder trial began. He was brought up on 3 counts of first-degree murder.
Only 3?
Yeah, he was charged with the murders of his wife, Julie, and his nephews, Kirk and Michael. The other 4 were dismissed without prejudice so that they could refile them later if necessary.
Oh, in case he gets off on the other ones?
Yeah. Not likely. Leading up to the trial, there was a story that had come out from Jim's confession on his tape.
Mm-hmm.
He claimed that Steve Buckner had sexually molested his sister Julie when they were growing up, and that this was the root cause of the problems between the 2 families.
That's a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah.
But it's not those babies' fault.
If I read it right, and I think I did, the prosecution didn't dispute this. They actually provided it as another motive. And one of Julie's close friends testified that Julie had confided in her about the molestation and she had recommended she seek counseling.
Wow.
And Jim says that was the argument that day. It had nothing to do with the affair. There was nothing even mentioned about the affair. The affair had been over for weeks. And he was telling Steve, you are messed up for what you have done and you need to go get counseling and you need to stay away from my family.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that was the argument. He was surprised by the idea that it was about the affair. Many people testified on behalf of Jim, sharing stories of his caring and giving nature. They were all asked the same question by his defense attorney. Do you still consider Jim Schnick one of your friends?
Oh, that's...
Every single one said yes.
Wow.
Including the wife of the arresting officer.
They really respected this guy.
Many of the people, when they went to the stand, as they passed by him, they said kind words to him and smiled to him. they all still respected and liked him. And most of them just didn't believe it.
Damn.
Yeah. On April 13th, the videotaped confession was played for the jury. In preliminary hearings, the defense had tried to get it thrown out, saying Schnick was on painkillers and his rights were violated in taking a statement while he was under the influence.
Good try.
I don't totally disagree with this, though. But no, here's why. And I only saw the part of the confession where it's the story that they took to trial. The only part of the confession that was played then. And I don't know if the full videotape was played to show everything or not. But from what I understood from reading in the newspaper articles, and I always try, you know, especially since I talked with S.K. Murphy, and she says, you got to read between the lines. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to look at those paper reports and you got to see what is actually there. And so I'm not saying he's innocent. Whoa, no. But if he told all these different stories during that confession, maybe he was under the influence enough that he shouldn't have been.
Did they go back and talk to him when he wasn't under the influence?
No. At that point, he had a lawyer and he was done because he was charged.
Did he testify?
No.
Well, I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, not at all. I'm just saying, I don't think that that's actually wrong to say. But we can talk later.
Fine, I won't talk to you anyway. I'll keep my opinion out of it.
No, I mean, we'll cover that later. On April 14th, the jury deliberated only 2 hours before returning a verdict of guilty on all three counts.
2 hours ain't very long.
Not at all. The court reconvened for the sentencing the next day. A psychologist testified that Jim Schnick would likely never kill again. He said that animosity between him and the Buckners was something built over years, and with his high moral standards, the incest was something he could not get past.
Dude, I get kill Steve. I get it. I would get that. But why take out your wife? Those babies, that's the sister-in-law. They had nothing to do with it.
I know.
Okay, whatever. He would have got off a little bit easier if he didn't just killed Steve.
Yep. In all honesty, he might have gotten off on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sounded wrong, but you know what I mean.
May not have got life, you know, in prison. Or death. Mm-hmm. Or whatever, but...
He believed that Jim, the psychologist, believed that Jim would be a role model for other prisoners. The jury was out only 3 hours this time. When they returned, they recommended execution for Jim Schnick.
Oh, man.
And so I was reading the papers, trying to find more information along the way. And I found one paper that was printed after the jury had come back with death penalty. And there was a picture of a woman and a man kind of. She was crying so hard that she could barely stand, and he was holding her, had his arms around her, holding her, escorting her. And I'm thinking, it's got to be family or something. It was one of the jurors.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It was one of the jurors who had just recommended death. That's how upset she was.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Whew. I was like, holy crap, that woman is really upset. I mean, I might be the same way. Anyway, on May 24th, 1988, Judge John Parrish followed the recommendation and sentenced Schnick to die for the killings of his wife and nephews. He was sent to sit on death row at Potosi Correctional Center.
Wow. Yeah. This hurts my heart.
I know.
Like, it's just crazy. I get it after killing so many people and those kids and stuff.
Two families gone. And two babies, children are the only ones left.
Two babies without parents now.
The story's not over.
Oh, my.
In November of 1991, the Missouri Supreme Court overturned the conviction.
What? Wow. Why? Why do they even care to?
During jury selection, One man selected said that he personally knew the sheriff and others working with the prosecution and would believe them over others because of their relationship.
Uh-oh.
He should not have been allowed in the jury pool, and this little misstep is what led the Supreme Court decision.
Wow. Well, they know that when they're picking jury.
Yeah. He wasn't on the jury. He was only in the pool, but he shouldn't have been allowed in the pool to begin with. And yeah, the fact that he wasn't even on the jury, people were furious. There was a little write-up in the paper by a citizen of Lebanon saying how outraged he was at the decision because of the amount of money it was going to cost taxpayers to retry the case. Because the first one they had to pay for, and now they have to pay for the second one.
Well, they shouldn't have screwed up then.
And yeah, he said, because of this little technicality, this small little technicality, we have to have a whole new case and taxpayers have to pay for it. I'm like, if that were your son, brother, father,
would you make a big deal of it?
You'd be worried about that little technicality to save their life.
For sure.
Just saying. I understand his outrage too. I'm not saying that, but the case was not retried though. Schnick offered to plead guilty if they would take death off the table and recommend life in prison instead. They agreed, and Jim Schnick is still serving his sentence at Potosi Correctional Center.
Wow. He knows he fucked up. Yeah. But at least he gets to live out his life. In prison, but at least he don't have to worry about getting executed.
That's right. Yeah. So I think the psychologist said, you know, he's going to be a model prisoner. He will be a role model for other prisoners to help teach them how to carry yourself and be upstanding. But he was worried about him because he was so naive in this small town farmer that really didn't know anything about the world and what could happen to him in prison.
Right.
Wow. So, would you rather? Da, da,
da, da, da. Oh, jeez. Oh, I like your music this time.
Thank you. I'm a singer. Anyway, so my would you rather this week. I know I said last week, I'm going to try and bring that back. And now here's another week. Whoa, look at me go.
Gosh.
Okay, so Tyrion, would you rather be a defense attorney defending a client you knew was guilty of something like this? Or be a prosecutor prosecuting someone you wasn't really sure was guilty.
No. I always, when we watch those crime shows, never understood how defense attorneys could defend somebody they know is guilty. So there's no way I could be a defense attorney. Only if I know they're not guilty. But not if they're guilty. Like, I wouldn't give it my all. I'd be like, oh, damn, they caught you, but you're going to jail. You know, so. I guess prosecution.
Okay.
You?
Boy, I don't know. I think.
You can't go around this question this time like you did last episode.
Okay. So here's what I think. I think I would rather be the defense attorney.
Wow.
Here's why.
I'm listening.
I would not want to be responsible for sending someone to prison that was innocent. Or sending someone to death that was innocent.
But you'd rather somebody that could possibly get off with killing somebody and be out in the middle of the world.
But here's my answer to that. It's not my responsibility to prove their guilt. It's my responsibility to make sure the prosecution does their job to prove their guilt. And my job is to make sure all their rights are met. That's it.
That's valid.
To make sure that they get a fair trial and that I am able to provide them a defense.
A fair trial, pretty much.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so it's not really...
It's not up to you to make the call of sending them to prison or not.
Yeah, it's not.
You cheater.
That's how the justice system works. Or doesn't. It depends on how you look at it. But, everybody gets a fair trial. And, you know, better... 1,000 guilty men go free than one innocent man be put to prison. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. And plus, you know how I feel about I would be the best defense attorney because I swear every time I see evidence on somebody, I'm like, well, I can explain that.
That's like on our ghost tours or investigations. Oh, I can explain that noise. Oh, blah, blah, blah.
That's what I mean.
Like, oh my gosh.
Stupid. So, anyway, there's that.
So, final thoughts. What do you think about all this?
I think it's incredibly sad and it's so confusing to me. Because like you said, why didn't he just kill Steve? And he knew that Jan would know Steve was coming to his house. Sure.
So what? You know?
Yeah. And I don't know. And I'm thinking that was probably the piece of truth that he told was he panicked. That was when he flipped his shit and
just wanted to get rid of every evidence, everybody.
I mean, that's got to be it. I don't think from everything that I read about him, I don't think he would have killed unless the situation was prime, perfect situation to set him off.
Mm-hmm.
And because everybody, like I said, even after he had confessed to killing children, people still loved him and backed him.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. And I think it was because people said, there's no way he was in his right mind when he did this.
Do you feel like they believed the story about Kirk killing instead of him?
I don't know. The defense actually did bring in witness that said Kirk did shoot with his right hand and he fished with his right hand. He did a lot of things with his right hand. So it would have been possible. But Kirk's hand was actually clutching the gun. And it wouldn't have been. It would have fell from his grasp when he died, is what was said anyway. So I don't know. I think it's terribly sad that the babies all had to die for that. I mean, They were no part of that.
It was innocent, like innocent babies.
Yeah. So, and I think, I don't know, that's the part that doesn't fit for me is the children. And the fact that was the only part he really owned up to. He only owned up to killing Jan and the children.
See, why own up to that? I would rather say,
yeah.
I'd rather say I killed this man because of blah, blah, blah. I killed Julie because blah, blah. There's no way I would say, oh, I killed this 7 and 8 year old because of no fucking reason at all.
Yeah.
So you've already admitted to murder. Just tell the whole truth. Let us know what's going on. I mean, I don't know.
That's what I think is so weird about his confession was the fact that he, you know, he wouldn't admit to Julie and Steve, but he would admit to everybody who was innocent in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
Very.
Yeah. And so, and his story was Kirk ran away and he shot him when he was running away. But apparently the evidence showed that Kirk fought him and was trying to protect his family is the reason that he was killed. Anyway, that's terrible.
Yeah. Thanks for that story.
You're welcome. I know it's a bad one. I hate it, but... Also, there was some more information. And one thing that I actually think is probably plausible, the mistress, Nancy Bruner. According to the defense, Jim was surprised to learn this was a motive because this relationship had been broken off for like 5 weeks, is what he said. Apparently, it didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy wasn't happy. But we do know that Jim and Julie were in marriage counseling. They were working on their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So could it be that that's actually the truth? And he had chosen his wife and he had told her to kick rocks and she got pissed off and went and told his wife then at that point?
There's no telling.
You know, I mean, it could be that she was just a woman scorned and everything, decided she was going to blow shit up.
Wow.
I think she probably... I mean, I would, if I were her, have a problem with living with myself after this, because really, that visit to Julie is what kicked this off. And if she had just went away, left him alone, it probably never would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe. There was the molestation that was always hanging over them. But
wow.
Anyway, that's terrible story, and you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. So, how about some iTunes reviews? Tell me we have some.
We have one.
Hey, I'll take it.
I know. It was Witty0310.
Very nice. Was it a good one?
Yes, it was a very good one.
5 stars?
Uh-huh.
I like it.
Me too.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Witty. Email me. I'll send you something special.
We'll give you a sticker. No, for real, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so don't forget our socials, everybody. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Show Me Scares. Our email, showmescares@gmail.com. Send us your stories. Yeah, I'm back on that.
Every episode.
We have an exciting trip coming up. We are going to visit my parents.
Woohoo. Just kidding. No,
I'm excited about that. By the time this comes out, we may have already been there. I don't know. I don't think so. No, I think it'll still be a little ways off.
You don't know.
So, I don't know. Anyway, we are going to visit my parents, and something you might not know about my parents, well, you probably don't since you don't know my parents.
Jeez.
They live in a house that they claim is incredibly haunted.
Ooh.
Some of the stories they've been telling me is like,
you're excited.
Insanity. I'm so excited. So, but you know, I'm skeptical too. You got to show me.
Let's see this proof. So yeah. Now we're going.
So now we're going. And we're going to, yeah, carry out a little investigation and see what we get. And it's going to be so much fun. And I get to see my family too. That's always fun.
Oh yeah. About them.
That'll be fun. And I think we might record an episode down there. I think we might do some kind of roundtable discussion, something. I
like it. Maybe your pops will get in on this finally.
Yeah.
He's excited too.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. It'll be a lot of fun. And hopefully we are able to find some information, maybe do a show on that house. I don't know how much information we can find. We have a very limited window of time to be there. And so getting to the courthouse to get deeds and all that is going to be a little difficult.
It's
so
a weekend. We'll have Friday, but we'll be there on the weekend, right?
Yeah. So that's what I mean. I don't know if we'll be there long enough to actually
do enough
research and create a cohesive story for all of us to be able to record together that same weekend.
We'll
that's
see what
terrifying.
We can do.
So yeah, we'll see what we can do. It could be fun. Otherwise, we'll just pick, since they live in Tennessee, we will just pick a Tennessee location and we'll talk about it.
I like it.
Because I think that would be good fun. Idea. It'll be like the Show Me Scares road trip.
Ooh. I like road trips.
Yes. So, do you have anything to add?
I do not. I know, I'm boring. I'm sorry. You gave me the hell of a look.
What's wrong with you?
I can't top all of your talking.
I know. So anyway, thank you for listening. I hope you semi-enjoyed this. I hope you really enjoyed it. I'm sorry that I did this to you. And
they come here. They're just as weird as us.
Yeah. We'll see you next week, probably with a ghosty story.
Ghosty.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm excited. Woohoo.
Anyway,
thank you for listening and have a fantastic week. Keep the reviews coming. We appreciate those.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Till next time. Bye.
Bye.